This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is the Ray Lucia Program. Glad to have you on board for the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves. The show all about your money, your business, and your life. Johnny Dean is in the house. We're just talking about music business.
Yeah, it's you know, life is I mean, there is money, there's business, there's life. Life is very important. You can't just make it all about money. You can't make it all about business. You gotta include your life as part of all of this.
Well, we were talking to our TV viewing audience about Janis Joplin and how at the end of Bobby McGee, I don't think I've ever heard anything better than that in my entire life. She's just wicked, was just wicked good.
Yeah, that age 27 thing got her. Well, you're correct. If you've heard that song, Me and Bobby McGee, which I think Kris Kristofferson wrote.
He did.
And but got her to sing it, which is brilliant.
Brilliant on his part.
But it starts off very, very mellow.
Blessed and flat and Baton Rouge.
That's all it is, just a guitar. And by the end, she's got the organ going and the guitar. Oh. She's screaming into the mic. I mean, what a great...
So we're going to try to get some Janis songs for you because now I'm on a Janis kick today. I don't know how we got off on that.
But. I don't know either. Now, let me tell you this, too. We'll get to this stuff. Okay, there are two other versions that I've heard of that song. Of
Me and Bobby McGee.
One, terrible. Gordon Lightfoot. Gordon Lightfoot?
Gordon Lightfoot?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, jeez.
And it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It ruins the song. But... Oh, what was the artist? And I'm not hip on these. Pink, I think it was.
Oh, really? I like Pink.
Did a performance of that song and sounded like Janis.
Really?
Almost exactly. It's from 15 years ago. We should look for it on video, and I'll play it for you.
Oh,
she
cool.
really mimicked Janis' voice.
I think she's exceptionally talented. I used to have one of her songs as my intro, as you
well,
recall.
Yeah, I do remember that. I'm not a big fan.
Get the party started.
No, no. But I'm not a big fan. But that at least... made her a little bit better in my eyes.
She's also like an acrobat or something.
Is she really?
Yes. At one of the Academy Awards, whatever, the Grammys.
Oh, okay.
One year, she was doing that little twirly thing with the
Oh, well, good for her.
Hanging down.
I mean,
yeah, she's
talent will always trump everything for me.
Yeah, I like Pink and red and green, for that matter. Yesterday, we talked about a charitable remainder trust.
Oh, we're getting into the heavy stuff.
Well, I got a question on it. And then I was reading from a fellow by the name of Frank Armstrong III, and he called it a split interest charitable trust. And I thought that we would talk a little bit about that. Also, some facts you might need to know about your 2019 tax return if you're interested. We can certainly talk about that.
You're talking about the one we're filling out for 2018 or the tax year 2019 for next year?
Yeah, both.
Okay.
Both, but because obviously the Trump thing went into effect beginning of last year, and so there's a lot of changes that you need to know about. One of those changes I'll tell you about right now. Sit back, folks. Relax. It is the Ray Program. Now you got to play a really good Eagles song. So I'm going to be singing Already Gone in my head right after I get through with Me and Bobby McGee.
Me and Bobby McGee.
Welcome. Okay, so... So this is pretty cool because there was a question that we got. Is alimony considered earned income for IRA purposes?
This changed this year.
It did not.
I know that the Republican tax thing happened last year, but this did not change until this year.
January 1, 2019, the rules on alimony changed. So if you're getting divorced this year, and you had thought that, like last year, any payment you made to the ex that was considered alimony would be deductible to you and taxable to he or she. And he or she, with that taxable money, could use that, even if they were, you know, were living on investment income, could use that as earned income to fund an IRA. That's done. Finito. No can do, because alimony payments are no longer taxable to the recipient. and they're no longer deductible by the payor.
We should throw in that this is, as you said, but I want to make clear that this is any divorces that happened, I think, starting January 1, 2019.
Yes, that is
so
correct.
If you've been doing it, you know, you've been divorced for a long time and you've been paying them, and you can, as I understand it, you can keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, everything.
It's deductible to the payor and not to the payee or whatever. That's for anything happened since 2019.
And so this, because this is a strategy show, because that's what we do, if you are getting divorced this year, and God forbid it doesn't happen to you, seriously, this will be 46 years for Jeannie and I, and two of them are pretty happy. No, just kidding.
Happily married for 28 years? 46 years ago we got married. I'm kidding. I know what you mean.
No, it's all good. But where was I going?
Well, you had started to say, yeah. God forbid it happens. Although I got to tell you, there are some divorces that absolutely should happen.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Where there's abuse and all that stuff. I'm not going to get into that. We're not going to play Father Mahoney here, okay? Are we?
Were you trying to do your Pat O'Brien there? What were you doing?
As a matter of fact, I was.
Of course you were. Certainly, my son. What are we talking about
here? My priest last night actually told a joke with an Irish brogue.
And he doesn't have one.
He doesn't, no. He's a young guy.
Yeah.
His Father Dave.
Yeah, I know that.
The bearded guy.
Sure, I know him well.
He's a cool dude.
Yeah.
Young guy. Former Marine.
Now, that I did not know. Yeah. All right, anyway.
But he plays the tuba or some French horn.
Did not know that.
And anyway, so here's what's important. If you are going to be getting a divorce this year, you need to sit down with the ex and the attorneys and all that stuff and negotiate. Because if you don't, you could find yourself, especially if you're the wealthier, let's say the husband makes $500,000 a year and the spouse was a stay-at-home mom. That income tax deduction for an alimony payment, support payment, pretty valuable. If you give that away without negotiating the net after-tax cost of an alimony payment, you're nuts. Now, the way to, I think, deal with this for many of them, is to negotiate the deal by saying, okay, if you expect to get X percent of the IRA or whatever, how about I give you more of the IRA because, in this example, you're a stay-at-home mom. You're in a very low income tax bracket. So if you're taking money out of the IRA, you're paying at a lower rate. I'm willing to give you a little bit more of the IRA because, to me, that's tantamount to being tax deductible, isn't it?
An amount equal, I presume, to whatever the alimony payment would have been.
The alimony payment would have been, and a little bit more to compensate
for
the tax liability. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the overall scheme, it's better for the both spouses. The husband, in this example, or the higher earner, gets what is tantamount to an income tax write-off. That helps. And the stay-at-home mom in this example reports it as income, but because of her lower bracket, she can afford to pay the income tax because he gave her more and maybe even a little bit more as an incentive to do that. This is where the attorneys, the CPAs, and you and your ex need to get on the same page. So save all the fighting about the kids and all that stuff for later. But when it comes to money, there are some really critical things that you need to be discussing.
So you're going to bring that up to me as the spouse, and I'm going to say, does it help me tax-wise? You'll say, well, yeah, I just explained how it does. I'll say, does it help you tax-wise? You say, well, yeah, I just explained how it does. I say, well, then forget.
Well, and then the fight goes on.
It helps you?
And then you know who's going to ultimately win?
Yes, I do.
Both of our lawyers
will
both win in that. But you are right. There's usually a lot of animosity that exists.
Yeah,
but I'm just telling you.
You're 100% correct. You're 100% correct. This is something that if you're not doing it, you're nuts.
But it could be better for
absolutely.
You, the lower income spouse, because you could negotiate for a higher amount. Plus, if you're getting the IRA money in a lump sum, you can roll it over to your own IRA. There's no such thing now as a deadbeat dad that's not paying you the alimony or whatever payments.
But I'm 35. It's IRA money. I know I'm going to get taxed on it, but I can't take this out. I'm going to get a penalty.
Okay, well, there are issues there, certainly, if you're 35. You know, the millennials are getting married later.
I'm 45.
45. 45, you could do a 72T calc and get it, but theoretically, you'd go to work, get a job, and that's your retirement money. It works much better the closer you are to 59 and a half, but it can still work for a 45-year-old.
And actually, I mean, I'm bringing this stuff up because that's what comes up, but I mean, it's better than just saying, here's an alimony check that I can't write off and that you now take as income.
And if you really hate my guts, you want to stay in business with me for the next 20 years?
Oh, you mean with alimony and all
that?
Yeah.
Well, you're in business with the ex. You're getting a check. They got to come by the house every once in a while and drop off a check. And usually they're late or they don't do it. And then you got to call them and you get another fight.
Alimony is the high cost of leaving.
Ah, very good. We'll be back on the Ray program.
Business owner, want to be a preneur, or just looking to manage your assets? You found the right place. Biz Talk Radio.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge. Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Ask and you shall receive. When I was a kid, I used to call radio stations and request songs. They would never play them. I just request one now, and look. 5 minutes later, it's on the radio.
Cool. The question is, how much do we have to pay?
Nothing, because I think we faded it out just in time before we have to actually, we
get a free. Can you come back with the end of the song here late, on the outro?
At the end where she's doing the whole,
Oh, my gosh, that was just killer.
It's got a nice cold ending, too, which I like.
Generate retirement income with a split interest charitable trust. So I get this email yesterday, right after the show, and a person was saying, can you explain how that charitable trust thing works? I have some real estate. And I forget which state the fellow is in, but I have some real estate, and I want to potentially gift it to charity. I said, cool. He was going to bequeath it, I should say, to charity.
Right. It's not give it while he's alive.
Right. And for those that are thinking about doing that, and so many people are, it's like, after I die, I'm going to give my university, X amount of dollars. Why don't you give them something now while you're still here? So that your name could be on the bell tower.
On the bell tower?
Our name's on the bell tower church. Go look.
Oh, that's why. I have seen that. Okay, I thought, the bell tower? Yeah. I want my name
up. We didn't do it with a charitable trust.
I want it on a building if I'm going to be doing it.
We did it with like a 5-year pledge that I'm not sure I ever fulfilled.
Oh, yes, you did.
No, I did. So anyway, the way this would work. So let's just pretend a couple of scenarios. You got a piece of real estate. It's a condo. It's rented out. It's a piece of raw land, and you're getting no income from it. And you're getting older, and you don't want to mess with collecting rents and tenants and all the stuff that goes, or the property manager calling you and say, you know what? The roof's leaking. We're going to need to spend another $3,000 to fix the roof. You're saying, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of it. Well, here's what you can do. You set up a charitable trust, and the trust names you as the trustee, which means now you are in control. Now you've got to act as a fiduciary. You can't fool around with the money for you, but the property gets transferred to the trust. You as the trustee say, we've got a piece of property. It's worth $500,000. We're going to sell it. And so the trust just got $500,000. So the trust now has $500,000 in it. You took a $500,000 property that you paid $100,000 for, and there's $400,000 worth of capital gain that if you sold it, you'd have to pay, $100,000 plus in capital gains tax, and you transfer that property to the trust. And let's say that the rental was making you no money because with all the repairs and everything, you really weren't cashing any checks. Or it's a piece of raw land that you were saving to give to your grandkids, and your grandkids, left you for another grandpa or something like that. I don't know. So now there's $500,000 in the trust. You're, let's say, 70 years old. Now I'm going to make up these numbers, so don't hold me to them. But you get to take a tax deduction. And the tax deduction is going to be equal to whatever you are going to write off over time, subject to at least a 10% minimum that's left over for the charity. And actuarially, the way that works is the more income you take out of the trust while you're alive. Oh, yes, you put $500,000 into the trust in this example by the trust selling the property, and then you take a residual lifetime income or an income for 20 years or 10 years. You can design it any way you want. Now, the more beneficial it is to you, the lower the tax benefit. The more beneficial it is to the ultimate trust beneficiary, the better it is for you, because the trust beneficiary is presumably a charity of your choosing. So, you want your name on the bell tower. I go to St. Mike's, my church, and I say, I haven't done this, I'm just making this up. I say, here's a piece of property worth $500,000, all right? We're going to sell the property. You're going to be the beneficiary of this trust. I'm going to take $2,500 a month out of that $500,000 for the rest of my life. It's an annuity.
$30,000 a year.
A charitable remainder annuity trust. So that's like, it doesn't have to, you don't have to buy an annuity, but it's like an annuity. I wouldn't do it that way. What I would do is I would say, I'm going to take whatever the earnings are from this trust. And there are some problems with that too. So maybe it's a uni trust, or maybe I just say, you know what, give me 4 or 5% every single year and we'll call it a day.
Of the 500 grand.
Right. The uni trust is, you know, or an income, a net income trust. You can take the net income out. A lot of different ways to structure it. I don't want to get into the technicals here, but at age 70, with maybe $30,000 a year coming out, I would assume the residual value is going to be somewhere in the, what, $300,000 range, and I get to take that as a deduction. Again, this is way oversimplified. So I get to deduct $300,000 this year. Now, I can't really take all 300 of it this year unless I made $900,000 or $1 million, 30% of adjusted gross income.
Because it's this particular type. I think stock you can do more or something.
Well, no,
yeah.
It's cash. You can
it's
do
cash.
More.
You
These
can
are
do more.
Appreciated
Sorry.
Assets.
Yeah, you're right.
But I get to take it over 5 years. So in reality, I'm going to get a nice write-off every year for 5 years. So I get a 30%, or excuse me, yeah, 30%, $150,000 tax write-off that I can take, you know, every year for the next 5 years. So, Roth conversion now sounds really interesting to me. So let's say the same individual had a really big IRA, like the gentleman we talked to the other day, a really big IRA,
like
taxable,
like $2 million.
Could be
or 2 something.
Million, million, whatever the number is. You could theoretically take, you're over 59 and a half. This guy's 70, remember. He could take a big distribution and potentially offset it by his tax deduction. He takes the distribution as a Roth conversion, and now he's got a way to grow a substantial amount in a Roth IRA, having paid no tax on the conversion because it's offset by the charitable deduction. Now, don't think this is just a tax scam and you're going to come out ahead. You still got to love the charity because net, 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 I can do the math. They're still not going to be better off than just keeping the doggone money. But that spices up your retirement plan quite significantly. So you get to do good by your charity, and you get to do good by your heirs as well.
They calculate how much they expect the charity to receive at the end of your life.
Right.
That's what that calculation is. There's a chance you could live a lot longer.
That's right.
The charity could wind up with, in your example, instead of $300,000, it could be $200,000. It could be 100-something thousand. You still got the $300,000 tax deduction at
the
time.
And if you invest the money wisely and earn more than 6%, then obviously there's going to be more in the bank for the charity. If you earn less than 6%, there's going to be less in the bank for the charity. But it's all based on these formulas and actuarial calculations. Wonderful thing to discuss with your favorite charity and your tax man or woman.
For sure.
And your attorney. Okay, stick around. We've got more. Don't go away.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quick.
This is Biz Talk Radio.
Keep listening to this station or take us on the go by downloading our free smartphone app, Biz Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. Glad to have you on board. Johnny Dean is in the house. If you want to email me, we've got a lengthy email coming up.
Yeah.
But I do want you to read the whole thing if you can.
I will. I think it was James had a question on, it had to do with the Roth conversion, I believe, question.
We've been getting a lot of those questions lately.
Well, we have. And people, I guess, are interested in the tax ramifications of doing this. The main question always seems to be, is this a good idea to do or not? Roth conversion.
Well, on the timing, and because the Trump tax bill, well, yeah, there's a deadline here, that 2025, where rates are going to go up.
And some people, yeah, some people are concerned about that, especially those who are going to retire right around that time.
Yes.
So anyway, I will read it, maybe condense a little bit of it.
I'm always impressed with our audience, though, because they're all pretty doggone smart. They ask some really, really good questions.
Well, it's good, because what they're doing is saying, here's what I'm planning to do. I'm planning to do this, this, this. You say, hey, that's pretty good so far.
Yeah.
And the only question is, what am I missing? And sometimes they're missing a little, sometimes they're missing a lot.
Yeah, I can usually come up with a couple of tweaks, but by and large, I think our audience is very, very well-trained.
Yeah, and if you want to email us, go to the website, raylucia.com, and then there's a little, I guess, a link or a button that says Ask Ray. I should really look. I just trust people know where to go. It says Ask Ray. You click on that.
I got to do something with the website. I've got to do something with the website.
But you're the only one doing it. I mean, you know, you're one man.
I just got to hire somebody, break down. I just hate all that stuff.
I know. It's a real hassle.
Twitter and Facebook and all that.
Forget all that.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Adam, can you help me? You think Adam can help me?
Well, for a little bit of this.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Okay, I'm going to give you 5 investments to choose from. With 10-year cumulative returns, which one do you want?
You're going to give these? I have a choice?
You're going to choose. Investment right. 1, minus 7.5% for 10 years. This is cumulative.
So at the end of the thing, I'm minus 7.5%
low.
So $900,000 is now 92.5. Okay, I don't like that.
Okay, investment 2, 159%.
Oh.
Pretty good.
It's better. I'll tell you. Okay.
Investment number 3, 342%.
Well, now I'm going to start looking at that.
Number 4 is minus 26.5%.
Toss that out.
Investment 5, 177.5%. Which one do you want?
Okay, well, the obvious choice is the 300-some-odd percent of choice number 3 or whatever that was.
Now, what's really interesting is every single one of those was the same investment. There were 10-year periods of the Standard & Poor's 500. I was reading this morning. I thought this was fascinating, by Rob Isbitz, who's a very smart guy. Anyway, the minus 7.5% was from 1968 to 1978.
Remember, over 10 years?
Yeah. These are 10-year performances. Now, the 159% was 12/31/78 to 12/31/88.
Yeah, it was a pretty good run.
The 342% was 1988 to 1998.
Those were the good old days, man. There were a lot of good old days. This is the S&P?
S&P 500.
S&P was a benefactor of the whole NASDAQ thing, because a lot of NASDAQ leaked into the S&P at the time.
Investment 4, minus 26.5%. That's 1998 to 2008. And investment number 5, 177%, 2008 to 2018.
Yeah.
So what's the point? The point is, you can cherry pick returns. The point is, this is a broad index that everybody loves so much, but it also makes the point that the broad index can produce some pretty crappy returns too, depending on when your entry date is. Because obviously, in 1998, things looked unbelievable. I mean, yeah, I know in 96, Greenspan said there's a rational exuberance, and then he got egg on his face because the market like doubled in the next couple of years. But he was right. He was just early. But things felt pretty good until, of course, the 2000 through 2002 tech wreck, and then the financial crisis in 2008. All of a sudden, you've got a minus 26% return. So if you are a new investor to the market, and I know a lot of them who went through after the 87 crash, got out of the market, and started watching it, and watch it go up and up and up and up and up. And finally,
in 1998, they capitulated.
They capitulated, threw it all in, and 10 years later, they had a minus 26%. They threw in 100 grand. They got 74.5 left 10 years later. And God forbid they were on the precipice of retirement.
Well, but then you know what they did?
Yeah.
10 years of rotten returns in 2008, things were awful.
They got out.
I'm out. This is it. I gave it 10 years. I'm down 20-something percent.
Hey, I can get 0.2% in the money market.
I'm going to do this. I'm going to ride this out. And then that was from 2008. And now here they are 10 years later. They missed out on 177%.
And this is why, by the way, we talk so much about strategy. Because the market is not coherent. It is not the kind of thing that you can set and forget unless you have a strategy to do so. Because as you just mentioned, that person that invested in 1998 and got out in 2008 missed out on one of the best runs ever in history, which may still be going on. We don't know. But certainly it's been within hours of 10 years.
You know what? These eights have been very unkind. Or no, I shouldn't say it. These eights have been turning points since 1968, right? We had good and then the bad and then the good and the bad. I don't know if history repeats itself. I'm not saying it will, but maybe the 2018 downturn. I don't know.
We don't know.
Predictions? I don't know.
We don't know. Which brings me, thank you very much for the segue, to market expectations 2019.
Oh, my.
Stocks, bonds, inflation, and junk. By William Baldwin, whom I know, a senior contributing editor to Forbes.
Billy Baldwin.
Billy is not the same one, but...
No, but, you know, that's all right.
This guy's a little short guy with a beard. Nice guy. I've been on a couple of TV shows with him, Forbes on Fox or something, years ago.
Oh.
And then he would ask me all kinds of penetrating questions. He was like, I don't know, he was like interrogating me in the green room.
You mean off the air?
How much do you have under management? How do you do it? What do you chart? I'm going, are you an investor? Are you like an investigative reporter? What are you asking me all this stuff for?
Not at this time, Your Honor. I'd like counsel to answer that for me, if I may.
So what to expect in real returns? This is interesting because I'm not going to get he's got his prediction, but what does he know? I go straight to Vanguard. Because Vanguard, they've got a lot of money to do a lot of research. Not that he doesn't. Forbes, I guess, could do it too. Here's what they have to say. An expected real rate of return this year. Federal money markets, 0.6% with a yield of 2.3%. That's real. So in other words, they're thinking inflation is going to be about 1.7 or so percent. They're not accounting for taxes here. This one I found interesting. High yield corporate bonds. Now, interestingly, in the same Forbes.com series of articles, there was one that said junk bonds suck or something to that effect. So get out of junk bonds. High yield bonds yield 6.7%, expected real rate of return 3.1%. Interesting.
For 2019?
For 2019. Total bond market yield of 3.3%. Boy, that tells you the difference on the spread there. So you need to understand when you hear the term high yield bond, you need to replace high yield with junk. All right? Non-rated risky bonds.
And what did they said 3 point something on high yield?
Net expected rate of return 3.1. The total bond market, they expect 1.4 real, that is after inflation. And the total stock market, they expect 3.3. So it's still the best performing asset class, according to Vanguard, for 2019. Real return of 3.3. If inflation's 1.7, they're at a nominal return of about 5%
on stocks.
So trees can't grow to the sky, as we've said many times, a stupid saying. My wife still, she asked me to explain that, and I can't explain it.
the sky is this ethereal thing out there. If I'm lying on the ground, the trees are growing to the sky.
Yeah, but
where
does
the sky
end?
It doesn't end.
Now, if you said to heaven, but where does that begin? Where does the sky end and heaven
begin? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Excuse me while I kiss
the sky.
The sky. Okay.
The sky.
The sky. Go on, would you? We'll stop that right there.
More on that in a minute. So the stock market's three. You're not going to earn, according to Vanguard, what you're expecting to earn in the next 12 months. Now, if I gave you the next 7 year forecasts, they would be equally dismal. GMO, for example, says -4% over the next 7 years, real after inflation returns. What to do about it? We'll talk about that when we come back. Don't go away.
I just can't.
Episodes on demand at biztalkradio.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. Glad to have you with us. If you'd like to email me, you should do that right now. RayLucia.com. Click on the Ask Ray button. Johnny Dean's going to be reading me an email. You got your glasses on for that one?
Not well, I will.
But before I get to that, I did tease something. What did I tease?
Well, you had said before the break that GMO, not the genetically modified organisms, but the organization, I guess.
Grantham, Mayo, and Von Otterloo, or whatever.
Oh, all right. Fine. Had predicted, okay, no, I'm sorry. Vanguard originally said something like expect a 5%
nominal
rate of return in stocks. GMO said no.
Well, I was doing a seven-year forecast. GMO's seven-year forecast.
Seven-year forecast.
You could add up all your pennies over the next 7 years.
7 years,
and
saying,
you wouldn't even have what you started with.
Right. Now, I don't happen to believe that. But your thought was, let's see what we can do about it.
Well, obviously, the GMO, they're building in some kind of a huge correction or a crash or whatever. All right? And that could happen. It very well could happen. And since we don't know, and frankly, Vanguard doesn't know, William Baldwin doesn't know, Billy Baldwin doesn't know, nobody knows, you have to protect yourself. So how do you do that? How do you protect yourself? Remember, we go back to strategy. What is your strategy? It's kind of like if you and I were going to start a business, wouldn't we pull out a piece of paper and try to write down every stupid negative thing that could happen to our business and figure out ways to insure against it?
Yes, that's what you actually hire some lawyers to do.
Right.
Because they know what to expect.
Right. So why don't you do the same thing with your own investment portfolio? Let's say GMO is right, and the next 7 years, you're going to lose money in the market. You want to know what something that's really interesting about that? If you lose money in the market over the next 7 years, one of the best things you could be doing is investing in the market over the next 7 years. In other words, don't modify your savings. If you're 10, 15 years away from retirement, don't change it. In fact, if you're putting 60-40 into stocks, go 80-20 because you're buying them cheaper. I know it's hard to do, but here's the other thing. Remember, we have a bogey. We've talked about this for 25, 30 years on this program. The bogey is 10 to 15 years. The more conservative you are, the more it's a 15-year bogey. That's what you have to allocate in terms of time to leave your stock market money alone. Because the more you fiddle with it, the less you will make. So having said that, you've got a big gap to fill if you need income, right? Now, John, you don't need income for a minimum of 10 years. So you shouldn't even worry about it. Maybe it's 5 years. So John Dean's got a $1 million portfolio, and he might have to worry about the first 5 years of retirement 10 years from now. That gets you to 15, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
So if you wanted $40,000 a year from your $1 million portfolio, I would just pull out my calculator, and $40,000 a year for 5 years, I call it 3%, means you need $183,000 in your portfolio 15 years from now to buy that. But if I'm going to use an inflation adjustment to that number, take 180,000 right now of your $1 million, sanitize it in a safe place.
Non-volatile asset.
And you'll be okay. Now, every year that goes by where you've got a profit of something greater than what you expected, what do you expect for stocks to do?
Well, let's say over a 10-year period, let's say 7%.
So just picking up. In any year where you do better than 7%, scrape a little bit of that off the top and put it in your safer bucket so that you can buy maybe an extra year. So now you're out 16 years or 15 and a half years. And that's how you protect yourself. Now, I didn't even get into the fact that all of these studies are quoting the Standard & Poor's 500. Those are, you know, big companies in the U.S. What about small companies? Don't they do well, too? Yes, small companies do better than big companies. They're just more volatile. So add small stock. What about international? Oh, God, international has been horrible lately. Emerging markets, terrible. Yes, they have been. And what happens over time? We kind of flip-flop, don't we? It's just recency bias says, God forbid you should buy internationally or emerging markets. God forbid. But in reality, and I know a lot of portfolio managers that have gotten the tar kicked out of them because they manage a global portfolio. Global ain't cutting it lately, guys. But it may cut it over the next 7 years when GMO says that domestic portfolio might only do -4 real rate of return. So you can't give up on the portfolio manager. I read something a few weeks ago that said you can't really identify who a good manager is for like 15, 20 years.
Oh, of course, because you can predict something over 15 or 20 years with relative certainty. This is where this whole idea of recency bias can really kill somebody.
Absolutely.
Because they're sitting there and they're going to say, you know, in 1998, why am I not totally teched out? It's 1998, 99. I should be 100% tech. 3 years later, why do I have any tech stocks at all? What's the matter with you? They're horrible.
And I got news for you. All of us got caught up in the technology buzz back then. Money managers did. Financial planners did. It's almost like Bitcoin a couple of years ago. A lot of people were jumping on the Bitcoin bandwagon.
Well, it seemed like the right move because, I mean, the train was moving fast. Why didn't you at least hop on? Maybe people thought, well, it's not going to last forever. I'll hop on, get a little ride, and then I'll hop off. Problem was, when people hopped on, they said, this is a pretty good ride. This is pretty good stuff. Give me more, man. And they got hooked.
How'd they say that?
Give me more, man. They got hooked. I got hooked. I couldn't jump off.
All right, I think we have time for one email. Do we?
Minute and a half.
That's a long email. What was he asking about?
Okay. We can tease it.
Yeah.
He had $315,000, I believe. He's going to retire.
Oh, this is the guy that's going to do the big Roth conversion.
Right. So the idea was, we really need more time to talk about this.
Okay.
But the idea,
let me just generally talk about that because I know we're running out of time. Big Roth conversions require big time thinking. I'm not opposed to it. I had a great conversation with our friend Bob the other day. It's a similar question. I'm not opposed to it, but I really think you need to take a step back and look at a lot of different things. For example, what's it going to do to your marginal bracket? In this guy's case, he was going from 22 to 24. That's not that big of a deal. What's it going to do to the taxation on Social Security? Well, that big, he's already paying the max tax. What's it going to do to your Medicare premium? A lot of people forget that. And then finally, and this is the one that a lot of people miss, if you don't do it and the heirs inherited the money taxable, who's paying the higher tax, you now or them later? Interesting.
We got to talk more about this tomorrow. Can we save this for that?
Save it.
All right, let's do it.
Anyway, folks, thank you so much. Tell your friends and neighbors about the program, The Ray Lucia Show. You can check us out online at raylucia.com. Now go out and make it a fantastic day. God bless you all. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk.